Okay, Liz, here's some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, multiple systems, delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs, you cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems, and you improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors.
Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hollywood. NetSuite.com/Hollywood. NetSuite.com/Hollywood.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
Do we have a meeting tomorrow?
No, we have nothing. No meetings.
Free day!
Should we perhaps go to Benihana?
We should.
Hi, and welcome to Happier in Hollywood, the podcast about how to be happier, healthier, saner, more creative, more successful, and more productive in a backbiting, superficial, chaotic, unpredictable, fundamentally insane world. I'm Sarah Fain, a TV writer and producer living in LA, and with me is my high school friend and writing partner of 19 years, Liz.
That's me, Liz Craft. On this podcast, we talk about being writers in Hollywood, how we balance a career and friendship, and how to survive the war of attrition that is life in Los Angeles.
This week, we talked to up-and-coming TV writer Brooke Sitgraves-Turner about her first experience as a staff writer on The Fix. What was the best part? What was the worst? And most importantly, what advice does she have for aspiring Hollywood writers?
Then in Take a Hike, we talk about the concept of Swedish death cleaning and why we should all get rid of our stuff now. Finally, this week's Hollywood Hack offers another solution to the ongoing problem of how to achieve what I call meeting hair. Okay, Sarah, let's dive into From the Treadmill Desks Of, in which we discuss what's most pressing in our work psyches. And this week, it's being a staff writer on a TV show, and we're getting a report from the front lines. A lot of shows have just started up this season's writer's room, which means all over Los Angeles, there are brand new staff writers. And for anyone who doesn't know what a staff writer is, it's the lowest level of writer on a TV show. And it is a huge deal to get your first staff writer position.
Yes. And we've talked about this before, but we want to revisit it with someone who's just completed her first season as a staff writer. Of course, the person we know best in that position is Brooke Sitgraves-Turner.
Brooke, welcome.
Welcome. Hey, y'all.
Hey, so
thanks
good
for
to
having
see
me.
You, Brooke.
Good to see you too.
Now, Sarah, we've got to tell everyone part of what inspired this segment was our Happier in Hollywood Writers Retreat.
Yes.
Because Brooke was at the retreat and everyone knew she was a staff writer on The Fix. And we heard from many people after the retreat that they would have loved to hear more from Brooke. That.
Right.
She was exactly where they want to be, and they would have loved sort of Brooke to have her own session to talk about being a staff writer. So we thought, well, let's do that session on the show.
Yes, because we finally did do our surveys after the retreat.
Yes,
and
yes,
this was
yes.
the feedback we got, which
yes.
we really appreciate, and we're taking it to heart. So Brooke is here, everyone.
To share her experiences.
Hopefully I have some gems. We'll see.
So, Brooke, was it what you expected? That's my first question.
Yeah.
You know, it was. I mean, the great thing is you're finally doing the job you've always wanted to do, which
right.
is so cool. And I'd worked with you two and Marsha before, so I kind of had a sense of what the vibe would be.
Yeah.
And thankfully, everyone in the room was awesome. So, yeah, it was totally...
We do have
expected,
a no-assholes policy.
We yeah. do. And
sometimes people slip through.
Yes, but for sure on that show, everybody was a really nice person
yeah.
and very supportive of the lower-level writers.
Yes. Oh, yeah, so supportive.
So was there anything surprising about it? Like, was there anything that kind of made you go, oh, huh?
I don't think so, honestly. You guys had prepared me so well for this experience that it really didn't feel like anything surprising to me, you know?
Well, what do you, is there anything that you think would surprise other people? Like because what surprised me, I will say, when we got our first job was how hard it was for me to follow the conversation.
Yes, how fast it moves.
Yes.
It really does, for us, it felt like a different language the first couple months.
Well, yeah, I had no idea. People, here I think we're talking about the second scene of Act One, and suddenly someone's like, and then in the fourth act break, this happens, and I had no idea what was happening.
Yeah. Well, see, you two prepped me for that, though.
Yes, we
you
did.
You said, right. Hey, it's going to be difficult to follow the conversation sometimes. Give yourself a break. So I was like, oh, yeah, I have no idea what they're talking about, but that's fine.
And also for you, you had been, like, we are in many ways sort of a mini writer's room. And certainly
yes.
with Marcia, we were like a mini writer's room. So you had been following that conversation,
yeah,
you know, for a couple years prior.
Exactly, right.
To being in the room.
And had been in a room as a writer's assistant on a show prior. So it just mm-hmm. felt like another.
Right. Yeah. It's just now you were sort of at the table instead of taking notes.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, I can talk in here.
Yeah. Now, was it scary the first day?
The first day was scary. Yeah. I mean, I can't really describe that feeling again. It was because you just want to come in with great ideas and, you know, but a lot of it is sort of figuring out who's in the room, what their styles are, how they best contribute, and kind of where you can plug in.
Oh, interesting.
Even considering the whole fact that, like, staff writers should be solving problems and all that, that's definitely a key thing. But also just knowing, like, how you fit in on the team as it exists.
That's interesting. Yeah, like kind of just sussing out the personalities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a lot of it.
Yeah, that takes time. It really does.
So did you, I'm curious, like go home and come up with ideas to pitch the next day? Kind of how did you approach it?
Okay, so, and this is something I would tell everyone, and I'm sure a lot of staff writers do this, but I was like, every morning I'm going to have 5 pitches for the day. Mm. And even if we don't get to them, or if they end up being terrible, or if someone pitches them before me, at least I feel it's like a little security blanket.
Yeah.
Like I did the work before the room, so I have some things to talk about. And it's not like I have to come up with, you know, ideas in the moment. So that was it took a lot of the pressure off, which was
That's
nice.
That's a great idea. Mm-hmm.
And then if there was something in particular that we were stuck on the day before, I would stay after the room and just like work really hard to come up with a solution. And everyone in the room was so cool because you could, you know, soft pitch them ideas before the room. And like I would go to Jerome before and be like, hey, I know we had this problem. Like, what do you think about this solution? Should I pitch it? And he would be like, oh, yeah, great. Bring that up.
So that's a great thing we should take a moment to talk about. That as a staff writer, you can use the upper level writers as resources to help you so you don't feel like you just have to go to the showrunner all the time. In this case, we were the showrunners. You can sort of bring the upper-level writers into your fold, get them invested in you, have them help you. And if they're good, they should, you know, absolutely want to do that.
Yeah. And I think you were very smart in picking Jerome. I think on our show, literally, you could have gone to anyone.
Yes.
But it is a really good idea to find like a person who you know will be open and responsive. Literally anyone on our show would have been that
everyone,
person.
I was just thinking like,
but
Corey,
I'm like,
Denise,
Jerome is so nice.
Yeah,
you know, I can just see him being like, oh yeah, and enthusiastic.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. He would come in early and I'd be like in the office because I'd get in early and work on stuff before. And I'd just poke my head out like, hey, Jerome, question.
But
Corey and Denise were also super helpful and Kathy was awesome. So everyone was great.
Yeah. And something you just mentioned, Brooke, that you would get to work early. I think that's a really good idea for a staff writer
because there's
nothing that makes a better impression, you know, than walking into an office and seeing that someone is there before you are. And we don't, I mean, I don't demand people be at the office and care about FaceTime and all that. But what it does is it suggests that you're very enthusiastic about the show. And that is so important to feel like the writers care. And I think when you're a staff writer, that's an easy way to communicate you care.
And staying late is another. We talk often about Drew Goddard on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which was his first job as a staff writer, I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
And everybody on that show would leave because it was like they were several seasons in. It was a very upper level staff. People would be like, all right, if Joss isn't coming in yet, we're out of here. But Drew Goddard would stay. And then when Joss got there and
at
was
like
ready,
maybe 11 p.m.
Yeah. To kind of talk something through, Drew would be there.
Yeah.
And like that was
Huge.
And then they ended up becoming like best friends.
Yeah.
And Drew, I'm sure we don't need to tell anyone, has become hugely successful, as he should. He's an amazing writer.
Yeah. So, Brooke, stay.
So, Brooke,
yeah,
good.
You're
move.
Doing the right thing. Yeah. Coming early, stay late.
Yeah, staying late is huge. Even for, like, there would be times where you guys were working on rewrites, and I would say if you don't have kids or, you know, a significant other that demands more of your time, just put the time in and stay. Because I would even learn just by listening to you and Marsha work through all of the changes. Yeah.
Yeah. And there is a point at which that becomes abusive. So, you know, if you're in a situation where you feel like you have to do that, that's problematic. But yeah, if you can.
If you're getting something out of it, like you're saying.
Yeah.
Then it's a good thing to do.
Yeah.
And you all would definitely be like, Brooke, you can go home.
Now, I'm just curious, do you feel like you were heard in the room? Because I do think that's a problem that many staff writers face. I mean, I know we've dealt with this before, where you have ideas, but it feels like people pass them over.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good question. I do feel like I was heard in the room. I definitely think that I had to get better about communicating my pitches. And that's something I got better at over the course of the series, and hopefully we'll get even better at. But there were times, like, I would pitch an idea and people would be like, okay, the room was so nice. I cannot, like, emphasize that enough, because no one was ever like, oh, that's a shitty idea.
Right.
They would say, oh, okay, well, what about this? And just pivot. And you knew at that point, like, that's not what we were doing. And I know they say not to, like, if you pitch something and it doesn't land, to never pitch it again, you know, to kind of like move away from it. But I will say I pitched something in the room and I didn't do a very good job of pitching it. And I kind of knew after. And I talked to one of the other writers after, and I said, hey, you know, I pitched this idea. And they were like, that's not what you said in the room. What you just said is not what you said in the room. And I was like, oh, I didn't explain that well. So I actually went and found Jerome after the room and was like, hey, I have this idea. It was for episode 5. And I was like, this is what I meant to say. I'm not sure that I said that in the room. And he was like, oh, that's good. Like, we should talk about that. So, yeah, I basically realized I wasn't communicating my ideas that clearly. So I'm getting better at that.
Oh, that's really interesting. I mean, I know we feel like we wished you would talk more in the room.
Yeah, I was curious about whether you talked more in the room when we weren't there than you did when we were there.
That's possible.
Because often I think staff writers will talk more when the showrunner is not there.
Yes.
Because it's easier and it feels, you know, lower stakes. And it can be a more casual conversation. And then the showrunner comes in and people kind of clam up.
Yeah, and I think that's a problem, because in your case, it's not, because we know you and you can just pitch things directly to us. But if a showrunner doesn't know you, how are they getting to know you if you don't say anything?
Mm-hmm.
So on your next show, where we're not there, or, you know, hopefully we'll have a show, maybe you will be there. But I think you want to make sure the showrunner hears you contributing, because then they go, oh, that person's valuable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Even though it's hard. I mean, I was, as I've said many times, terrified when we started. Terrified. I mean.
Right. There was no one more clammed up than you when Joss walked in the room.
No. It was complete hell. So I'm so sympathetic to everyone suffering from that. But just try to make yourself do it.
I will say the one thing that's not. So I was never afraid to contribute in the room. But I will say that when there were more people in the room, I'm like a listener. And so I would, you know, I'm like listening to everyone, trying to figure out, you know, what's being said, and then also how I can best contribute and or fix the problem that's coming up. And so a lot of it was trying to anticipate when's a good time to interject, when's a good time to talk, when there are a lot of voices. So I would say, hopefully I'm better at that now, but definitely if the room is, when the room got down, if you guys were out of the room, you, Marsha, and, you know, if Corey was out of the room, it's like, okay, now the room is 5 people.
Right.
And it's easier to kind of jump in and contribute.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is, it's a very tricky thing.
And then it's not all about the room. It's also about writing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Brooke, you wrote great stuff for us.
Great.
I think everyone was, you know, really impressed with your level of writing, especially for a staff writer.
Yes. You made our lives much easier.
Yes. We knew we could give you scenes to write and they would be good, and they would be, something we could use. How did you find the writing? Was that, I would imagine if I had to guess, that was maybe your favorite part?
Yeah, it was my favorite part. No, it was so great. Honestly, yeah. It's funny because people would ask me, like, how is the job? Do you actually love the job? Because a lot of this, like, for so long, you're an assistant and you're writing on your own. And you're just like, oh, you're waiting for your first job. And then there is a little bit of, it's not fear, but I can't really describe the feeling. It's just like, I have this job. I really hope I like it. Like, I've been working so hard for this thing. I hope I enjoy it.
Yeah.
And it was great. It was wonderful. Yeah.
And did you think your writing improved being on a staff?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, really?
And, yeah. And I know you guys hate when I say this, but I do think that, I don't know, a lot of people don't give folks a shot and hire them before they're like absolutely ready. And I do feel like having been in the room, having then worked, you know, because we did group writing for a lot of the episodes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Having then gone off and written and then going to combine them and sort of working on our own scenes again and then also working on stuff other people had you know, written was so helpful.
Oh, good.
And just sort of in the structuring of a scene and in dialogue. I mean, it was great. It was a class. It was a master class.
Yay.
Yay. Glad to hear that.
Well, one other, I think, amazing quality that you have is you're just a positive presence.
Yeah.
Like, you're someone that people want to be around, and you kind of bring just like
a lightness
to things. And we have other friends who are like that. Sherry, I'm thinking of Sherry. Like, it's so nice to have that person in the room. Is that just who you are? Is that something you work on? How can other people who want to be staff writers, how can they attain some of that?
Ooh, that's so deep, guys. Thanks. You know, like, I'm generally like this. I don't know.
You're just you.
I think people need to meditate. Yeah, I guess I'm all about making sure that the energy I'm bringing to people is good. And I'm very conscious of that. So just get conscious of that.
Intention.
Yeah,
we talk about intention a lot. It's important.
Yeah. And Brooke, I feel like you've already given people great advice, which is to sort of maybe have 5 pitches ready as a security blanket. Mm-hmm. Any other thing that sticks out to you? Like, I know if it were me, I would say, don't, you know, sit and eat snacks all day.
I knew you were going to say that.
I did. Oh my God. When I started and gained 15 pounds. Any other piece of advice that you want to give to all the aspiring television writers out there?
I made a list.
Oh, you did?
I did. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Comes prepared.
I always forget things. I know we talked a lot about this, but yes, utilize the staff and go out, pitch things to people if you're not comfortable or sure of it enough to pitch it in the room first. I could have been spoiled, but, you know, people were great. What else? Oh, and this actually might take some time. Like, you might not even know this until your second job, but just figure out what your strengths are in the room and lean into them. And
great advice.
Also, you know, as I said before, pay attention to who's in the room, what kind of role that they're playing, and how you can best be a part of that team. Do the shit that no one else wants to do.
Ooh, that is
good advice.
So yeah, right sides and really whatever it is that anyone doesn't want to do, jump on it.
I think that is fantastic advice because that is a way where you can really make yourself so useful and then people start thinking of you as a go-to person and then they'll give you more and more.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I would absolutely visit other sets, especially if your showrunners are going to allow you to produce your episode, go to set. That was so helpful to me to go to set and meet everybody there and also just see what the other writer producers were doing.
That is another, gosh, mm-hmm. You're just full of amazing advice, Brooke.
That is really good.
That is so good. Like, we would say, we'd see you leaving and we'd say, oh, what are you doing tonight? And you go, oh, I'm going to the shoot, you know, in Hollywood. And we were like, wow, look at Brooke, like, showing up. And again, it's the, not only do you learn a lot on set, but it shows that you care about the show and people just want to know that the people on the show care about it.
Yeah. Yeah. As a new writer, like, you're new to this whole world, but you're working with people that have been doing it for 15, 20 years.
Yeah, that's true.
And so you're expected to sort of make sure everything's cool and give a note if necessary. And it's just kind of like, there's a moment where you just think, well, who the fuck am I? Like, they've been doing this forever. What business do I have telling them? And the truth is, like, I would try to remember a couple of things. And one was, like, you've been in the room the whole time with the showrunners. So, you know, you have that knowledge that they might not have. And then the second thing is, there's so many things going on set. and so many things for even the director, even if they're the producing director, to focus on and, like, pay attention to, that things slip through the cracks. So, like, you're a safeguard. So it's about, you know, you're not saying I know better than you. You're just kind of like, hey.
Yes, because you know the intention,
and you
might get blamed if that intention doesn't end up on the screen. So if you're on set, you got to speak up.
Mm-hmm.
Great advice.
Yeah.
My final thing, well, my almost final thing, I would say always be writing. And this is something I didn't do very well because I was actually very anxious about my first show. So my downtime, I was like doing research or rereading something or looking at notes. But I would say whatever, if you need another sample, write that, you know, spend whatever spare time you have working on your stuff, because the show, you need another sample. Probably.
Yeah. The show will end.
The show will end. If you're on a new show, there's like an insane percentage chance that it won't be picked up, as happened to us. And getting the second job can be almost as hard as getting the first job.
Yes.
The second job is very important, which leads us, by the way, to letting everyone know in this agentless world that Brooke is available for staffing. We highly recommend her. She's fantastic.
And I will talk more, y'all.
And she has great ideas. She's a great writer. She's a great cheerleader. She's great on set. So if you are out there and you would like to meet with Brooke about being on your show, send an email to happierinhollywood@gmail.com and we will make sure she gets it.
Coming up, we discuss a concept that comes from my favorite country, Sweden. But first, this break.
I don't know about you, but we're always looking for ways to get our kids involved and give back in our local community. That's why we're excited to tell you about Student Visionaries of the Year, a campaign by the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, which is the largest nonprofit organization dedicated to creating a world without blood cancers. Student Visionaries of the Year is a 7-week philanthropic leadership development program for high school students. Participants form strong teams and fundraise in honor of a pediatric blood cancer survivor in their local community. I would love for Violet to do this program when she's in high school.
This program is transformative. It not only helps students develop valuable life skills like project management, communication, financial literacy, and entrepreneurship, not to mention it looks great on college applications, but most importantly, it's also a chance for them to engage in meaningful work within their community and make a real impact on blood cancer patients and their families. You can learn more about Student Visionaries of the Year or even nominate a student at lls.org/students. That's lls.org/students. Okay, Sarah, it is time for Take a Hike, in which we discuss mental, physical, or spiritual health. And today it's mental. Swedish death cleaning.
Yay. Now, Swedish death cleaning.
This is inspired by Margareta Magnusson's book. It's called The Gentle Art of Swedish Death Cleaning, How to Free Yourself and Your Family from a Lifetime of Clutter.
Yes.
And should I read? Let me read the Amazon description of the book.
Okay. I can't wait until you pronounce the Swedish word.
Oh, wait. You know what, Sarah? You read it.
Oh, shoot. I should have kept my mouth shut. Here's how Amazon. Okay. Sorry. In Sweden, there's a kind of decluttering called, and I'm going to butcher this too, de städning. De means death and städning means cleaning. This surprising and invigorating process of clearing out unnecessary belongings can be undertaken at any age or life stage, but should be done sooner than later before others have to do it for you. I agree with that.
So the basic idea is none of us should leave our stuff behind for loved ones to deal with.
Yes.
And this has come up in your life, unfortunately, recently, because both of your parents passed away. You're an only child, so you have received everything.
Yes, and my mom was an only child also.
So my mom
received everything, and then she had Alzheimer's and couldn't deal with everything. And then so the everything of like four people then landed on me. And my dad recently died. And interestingly, he and my stepmom did clear out a lot of stuff because they moved to a smaller place. Mm-hmm. And then my stepmom has since moved again. So between the two of them, they really did this. Like, they did a lot of work to pare down. And I will just say, as the person to whom things descend, it's much easier. Like, the stuff from my dad's side, I think I have like 5 boxes, mm-hmm. maybe, and a bunch of pictures. But it's all like meaningful things that, you know, are kind of add to my life.
Right. Whereas because you have been dealing with sort of your mom's stuff for years, even
yes.
when she was still alive, you were going to Minnesota. She was living at your lake houses in Minnesota. So you were spending, I remember weeks,
yeah.
vacation after vacation, you were going through stuff and trying to pare down. And yeah, a lot of it wasn't, it was, you know, old tennis balls. I mean, just things that just didn't have meaning.
No.
And it was a lot of psychic weight.
It was. And on a certain level, honestly, there's still stuff there that I need to deal with. It's been 5 years, I think, mm-hmm. since my stepdad died. And I moved my mom to L.A. and sort of took over the responsibility for the house and the stuff. And the first year, I think 2 months of that year were spent there every single day, you know, on and off. I wasn't there for 2
yeah.
months straight, but every single day I was there just going through things and throwing things out. I got a dumpster. I mean, it really, you're right, it did take over my life, and it has been a big psychic burden for many years, and I'm very close to the end. I
yes.
think there's some stuff in the garage that I have to deal with. There's a whole other a whole other garage of stuff. But that's mostly just clearing out. And also right now, you know, we're moving into the office in my house.
Yes, because we no longer have our office on the Disney lot. But
yeah.
you have a great office in your house that we want to use with whiteboards and chairs and a couch. However, it is filled with not just your dad's stuff, but also some of your stuff.
Yes. It needs some death cleaning in a big way.
Yes. And what it makes me think of is I want to try to get rid of things as I go.
Yes.
Because when it accumulates the way right now you have some accumulated stuff of your own in the office, it then becomes just insurmountable. And
absolutely.
We sort of look in there and I'm like, I'll help you. But then I'm like, oh, God.
No, because what happened is I moved from my old house into my new house. All the stuff I didn't know what to deal with, I put in the office and closed the door.
Yes.
And
right.
now it's like, oh, wait, we need this space.
Yes.
I have to actually deal with this shit.
Yes. So I think the key is not to wait until some time
until
in
duh.
Life
as
to
the
do
Swedes
it.
Say.
Right. But to really try to say, you know, do I want this?
Yes. And to acquire less. I mean,
that's the key.
That's what I'm really focusing on right now, is acquiring less. It doesn't feel like it at the moment because it's Violet's birthday this
yes.
week, so I'm acquiring.
uh-huh.
But in terms of myself, I am acquiring almost nothing.
Yes. It's hard because I am one of those people where once I own something, I almost give it like lifelike qualities.
Uh-huh.
And I feel that it'll be hurt if I give it away. Like, I feel like I'm doing something wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, I have shoes that I haven't worn in 7 years, but I feel like, well, I don't want to get rid of those shoes. And so that's why just not bringing it into the house
yeah.
is really the key.
And there's one other thing, which going to your sort of emotional attachment to your objects, something that I've been using recently is a Facebook group called the Buy Nothing Project.
Ah.
And there are Facebook groups specifically for neighborhoods. So mine is the North Hollywood group. I post something on that group, and if someone wants it, they can have it. And it makes everything so much easier because, one, it's like,
yes.
oh, it's going to a person in
yes.
my neighborhood.
Yes.
So I don't feel like I have that kind of like, where's it going? I love this thing. You know,
yes.
I feel great about giving these things away. I'm giving a lot of Violet's toys and things that she's outgrown. And it's awesome. I know that there are kids in my neighborhood playing with these things.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And that helps me kind of release them.
And Sarah, we cannot finish this segment without me mentioning Gretchen, my sister and the co-host of Bad Girls, Gretchen Rubin, her new book about clearing clutter called Outer Order, Inner Calm. What's nice about it is that it tells you practically how to clear
yes.
the clutter that philosophically you know you should clear. Like the Swedish, the art of Swedish death cleaning is really about why we should get rid of things. Gretchen's book will actually help you to do it. So yes. I really highly recommend it.
Yes. And when I started the whole decluttering process in my house, her book was the thing that made me go, okay, I got this. I can do this.
Yes.
I'm just going to hold on to this book.
Well, she did it
get rid of everything else.
Our office.
Oh,
and
I know.
Thank goodness she did, because we had a much easier time moving. Although I still think we need another Swedish death cleaning of our collective stuff.
All right, let's do it.
Okay. Well, I'm interested to hear if our listeners believe in the notion of Swedish death cleaning. Send us an email or a voice memo. We'd love to hear your voices to happierinhollywood@gmail.com.
Up next, Liz has another hair hack. But first, this break.
There are some stories about my mom's life that I truly never get tired of hearing. For instance, her first job was as a movie usher, and she would walk around with a flashlight and tell people to get their feet off the seat, and I just love hearing about it. Well, just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for my family forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mother or your mom figure's life for years to come. And at the end, you get it all put together in a book. And I know I will be so happy to have that book on the shelf and be able to open it anytime I want and read a wonderful story about my mom.
Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, you'll save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/Hollywood. That's storyworth.com/Hollywood to save $10 on your first purchase.
And now it's time for this week's Hollywood hack. And once again, it's on the subject of hair, because good hair matters.
It does.
And Sarah, it is so elusive.
Yes, sadly. So you mentioned in episode 110 that there are a couple of hairstyling tools you've been using on the regular for all of these meetings we're having. But now you have something else.
Yes.
For your meeting hair.
Yes. So as I've said, I'm trying to do my own hair as much as I can, but sometimes I just can't do it, or we have so many meetings that I just want extra help. And I have recently discovered that Drybar has a new option. So to get a full blowout, I think it's $50 or it's somewhere between $45 and $55. Well, now they have a $25 option that is a 20-minute session. So you come in with dry hair and they'll style it. So they'll curl it, or I'm sure smooth it with a hot iron or whatever, but they don't actually wash it. So it's much less time consuming for them and for you. And it's much cheaper, $25.
Yes, this is a great idea.
So like, I am going to try this,
uh-huh,
and then I will report if it's, you know, if it works.
But okay.
I always feel like I need a full blowout, but I'm hopeful that this is going to be a new option for me.
Could be a breakthrough.
Could be. So Drybar, $25, 20 minutes.
And that's it for this episode of Happier in Hollywood. For questions or comments, email us or send us a voice memo to happierinhollywood@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. And seriously, please subscribe if you haven't already.
Thank you to Brooke Sitgraves-Turner for sharing her experience as a staff writer. You can follow Brooke on Instagram @BrookeSitgraves. Thank you to our executive producer, the amazing Chuck Reed, and everyone at Sankola Sound. You can follow them on Instagram @SankolaSound.
Thank you to everyone at Cadence13. And as always, thank you to Gretchen Rubin. Happier in Hollywood is part of the Onward Project.
Check out the other Onward Project podcasts, Happier with Gretchen Rubin, Side Hustle School, and the new podcast from Whole30's Melissa Urban, Do the Thing.
Get in touch. I'm on Instagram @SFain, and Liz is @LizCraft. We also have a Facebook group. Search for Happier in Hollywood on Facebook to join in on the conversation.
Until next week, I'm Liz Craft.
And I'm Sarah Fain. Thanks for joining us. It's a fun job.
And we enjoy it.
Well, since you guys are advertising that I am jobless, I'm also single.
Oh, should we talk about that? Yeah.
Let's just get those suitors out here.
Very That's careful, it. Brooke. Very careful.
From the Onward Project.